Kona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening, everybody. This is Shusada Kona Kumara. You're listening to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. Thank you so much for joining us again this evening, and it's always such an honor to be here with you. I'm joined tonight by some of our core council members, Pieli Yin, Tim, and Linda, and then we have a very special guest with us tonight, one of our weekly listeners from another state came all the way to Charlotte to see us, and we are so thrilled. And can I say your name? Is that okay? So Pete is here with us tonight, and hopefully we'll get him on the air if I can drag him over here. So we're going to go ahead and get started. If I can ask you all to take a nice deep breath and get centered, I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zakiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot in the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us. And I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity, and I place myself in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. Because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Good. Come join me. Let's see. We had a really lovely session here prior. And some of it I think I would like to reiterate for the program because it's interesting. I was in communication with one of my students this week, and he was, how do I say this? The ego that presents as him was not very happy with some of the pushback that I was giving him. And so he addressed me in an email in this certain way. And within it, he made reference to kind of repeating the same old stuff, you know. And I thought it was brilliant because on one end, the ego looks at this level of work and it will experience that like, you've said that like 1,000 times. You know, I got it already, right? But there's something so powerful about the different levels of understanding that are encapsulated in certain words that I use or certain phrases that I'll bring forward, because the understanding you will have of it today will change over time as you do your work. So part of what I have to do in my work is to be incredibly repetitious. And on one level, the ego doesn't like it because it says, well, you know, if I'm intelligent, I could read it in a book and I've got it, like I've got it. But that's not the point. The point is you're looking at it shifting your conscious awareness and actually creating a lasting shift. And so the truths that are brought to you through a guide need to be repeated because the ego is not capable of integrating them. And remember, you're here to actualize the understandings that you're given, and you actualize them through your life experience. And it never fails. I mean, I could say something to a student 50 times, and then on the 51st time, it's like this little light bulb goes off, and they're like, oh my gosh, Linda's smiling. Like, I never saw it like that before. I know, and Tim does this with me all the time. We'll be in session together, and he's like, I know you've said this to me like 100 times. But for some, like, but right now I get it, you know, and it's beautiful. And then the even more beautiful thing is that down the road, you're going to get it again, but you're going to get it from a different level, you know, the same words, but it'll be a different level of understanding. And that continues to happen over and over and over again. So if you, you know, if you are accustomed to listening and we get to a place where I'm talking about something, patterned consciousness, whatever, and you're like, oh, here she goes again. Well, there's a reason. There's a really important reason. The basic truths are relatively simple. And on one level, the guide, you know, through talking is really just kind of humoring the monkey mind. Because you like it. Because the ego's happy to be getting fed information, you know. It feels like it's productive and it's doing something. That's not where the real work is happening at all. You know, I could just sit here and stare at y'all and it would be done, right? Nothing else would need to happen. There are people who do that too, do that work. Brasso is one of them, right? He just gazes. That's all he needs to do. But people like it when you talk, you know? And then the ego can go, oh yeah, I get that. I understand that. And yeah. Oh, I've had that experience, right? So we do that. So that is why. But like I said, the basic components are relatively simple. So if I'm going to be on every week talking to you, there's going to be repetition because it's not like I have an encyclopedia's worth of stuff that you have to get crammed into your brain in order for you to walk off the life death cycle. That's not what's going on at all. Not even close. The less you cram in there, the better. Right? So... yeah. Okay. So one of the things that I spoke about in the session prior was the basic component of what's going on here on the planet. When I talk about fallen consciousness, there's, you know, the divine you hasn't gone anywhere. I mean, there's nowhere to go. And you are that. Your experience is not of being God because of all the projection that's going on and the overlays of the beliefs, right? And this is something that's actually, it's profoundly important when you see it, when you truly see it. And it comes later in your work, but I speak these things anyway. You will get to a point where you actually will see that the illumined earth is right here. It's right here. See, the mind wants to remember, the mind is always either or because it's polarized and it can't see that both can be equal, right? Like I talk about it being a sliding scale between lower mind to higher mind. Like they aren't separated, right? But that's what everybody, that's what the lower mind can lock onto. It has to be one or the other. It can't be both. So its sense of falling consciousness automatically creates a reinforcement of the belief in separation, because it says, well, because I believe I'm me and I'm separate, like, so I believe it, so it's true. Well, no, it doesn't make it true just because you believe it. Separation never happened. Just because you believe it did doesn't mean it did, right? It doesn't mean it did. You could be raised, you know, that 2 + 2 = 5, and you could go to your grave believing it's true, but it wouldn't be accurate, right? So this world that we experience, this is the illumined earth. However, your perception of it is the thing that's dictating your experience of it. And collectively, the perception is that it's polarized. It doesn't make it true. Now, I always say, you know, the microcosm and the macrocosm are the same thing. They reflect each other. It's the same thing. So what do I always tell you about you, who you are? You're God. God experiencing like a lapse in knowingness, amnesia, God that believes itself to be something other than. Does it make it real? Just because consciousness is identified with being separated, does it make it real? Did you stop being God just because all of a sudden a belief kicked in and the ego's holding to it? No. God's right there. There's nowhere for it to go. It is. Capital IS. It is. All. Single. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing outside of it. If there's nothing outside of God, even in a fallen state, where would you go? Do you see? I love to argue from a very rational place because it helps people, I think, sometimes. If God is all that is, there's nowhere to go. You see? You still exist and live and breathe and have your being inside God, because that's all there is. And just because you're experiencing a lifetime or multiple lifetimes or thousands of lifetimes where you are latched onto the concept that you're this separate identity, separated from everything else, doesn't make it real. It doesn't make it true. If you saw a schizophrenic running around thinking he was a chicken, it'd be real for him, wouldn't it? But everybody else would look and go, no, but he's just a person. He's a person who believes he's a chicken. But he doesn't stop being a person. Okay, so you're God who believes you're a person. You never stop being God. It doesn't stop just because a belief kicks in. And now you have, so that's the microcosmic level, right? You've got the individual. Now on a macrocosmic level, we're looking at the collective, all of humanity, experiencing a polarized world. Why? Because the collective believes that's true. The collective believes that there's the separate self. And that automatically sets up polarization. So the real can sit right here, but no one experiences it. Because the collective perception is that this is not the real. Which is kind of funny, because paradoxically, the collective perception is that this is real. And it is and it isn't simultaneously, right? Again, the mind doesn't like that. What do you mean it is and it isn't simultaneously? That doesn't make any sense. And the truth lies in the paradox, right? There's a lot of paradox when you go deeper and deeper, because that's what it is. This is real from the vantage point of the ego. Sure, absolutely. Boy, does it believe it. But it's not real. It's an overlay. And when you see past it, then it's like that's the seeing the man behind the curtain. Oh, I see. So it's all like a show going on. All of these polarized pairs of opposites playing themselves out to get my attention and to get me to believe that that's actually what's going on. That life and death are real and good and bad is real and light and dark. And but it doesn't make it real. And at some point you actually experience that, you see. And then you can actually move in the world from a completely different place. Because once you've seen it, you've kind of seen it, yeah? And at that point, you don't get fooled by it anymore. So Tim could come to me and he could be really angry because of something I said to him, and he can yell at me and really believe that I'm just, you know, I'm the devil incarnate, right? And I can look at him and he can be convinced. He'll have all the proof. This is what you said and this is what it meant, blah, 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 and have everything. And I can look at him and not be altered at all in my love for him. Because is that him? No. It's just a program. It's just a program running. Poor little Tim is not even aware that he's just a program. It's where compassion comes in. That is true compassion. It is that, you know. Oh, my word. You poor thing. You really believe that that's real for you, you know? Because I see different. I see divinity right there. I see God right there. You see? In Lakesh, another me as God. Yeah? That's what I see. Regardless of outer appearances, regardless of what's going on, that's what I see. Now, the world would look at that and say, well, but you're deluding yourself. Because there is good and bad. So let's look at all the horrendous things that are happening in the world. On that level, is it true? Yes, it's true. And you don't remember, you're here till you're not. So when you're, well, while you're here, if there's something you can do to help that on that level, do it. Right? But you don't get attached to it. It's just playing a game. Right? If there's something going on in your community where there's a real lack and something needs to be done, step up and do it. See, what the mind wants to do with that as a seeker is say, well, but then I'm believing the story. No, not necessarily. You can step up and do something to alleviate someone else's suffering. There's nothing wrong with that. But it doesn't mean that you believe the whole story, because you can still see past the story. Right? So remember the three keys to how to live in the world? Have you ever heard me say that? Yeah? Yeah. I've repeated it a lot, apparently. how about that? So to live in the world, right, you have to be able to see clearly without being in denial about what's going on first, because denial is a big thing. Ego loves to be in denial, repress things. And then the second component is do what you can. Do what you can. And the third and most important component is don't attach to any outcome. Right? See where there's a need. Fill the need to the best of your ability. And then release ownership of it. Let it go. Let it be what it's going to be. That's it. And it's very simple. It's very simple. It's simple when you function from one level. From another level, it's not so simple. The attachment thing's difficult for a long time. Yeah. You had that look on your face, Pelion. You're like, The attachment thing is difficult. Because, of course, the attachment just shows that the story's at play. And that's a struggle. And I'll share from a personal place, right? So with the Shambhala Center, that's a struggle, because everybody who volunteers here to do what it is we do is invested in what we're doing, right? And we all play our part and we all bring what we can bring to the table. And it's difficult to keep everyone in a space where they don't attach to what that means, because it could fall apart tomorrow. And that might be okay. But when you've invested yourself in something, when you see what, potential change it could bring to individuals, to the collective, it's hard to detach, right? But it's only the personal self that's attached to begin with. It's a tough one. So this is what's going on. There's this overlay. So the overlay, the superimposition, right, of the projection of consciousness from the identified place has created a world where everybody sees the play of opposites and believes that that's reality. But it all falls apart when you see through it. Now remember, another thing I'll repeat again for the thousandth time is that you aren't here to change anything. You're here to see through it. It's a really important piece. It's so important. And I tell you that, I started my deep work in January of 2008. How long is that? How many years is that? Huh?
Seven
years. Thank you. So 7 years of dissolution work, 7 years of, and when I say dissolution work, I am not kidding. I jumped in head first with no parachute, just dove in, right? So the first year and a half of my work was hardcore. Most of it fell away in a very short time. But I still will come back to that statement, and I still see it differently over and over and over again, that we aren't here to change anything. We're here to see through it. That takes on new meaning. It's another one of those things. It's so important, that little phrase, because it's a very easy thing to forget, because the ego constantly wants to change things. It makes a judgment, and within the judgment, it will feel a need to do something to make a change. Because there's preference. The ego always has preference, right? It'll judge something. So there's an unmet need that's sitting there. It creates a desire, right? Then within the desire, all kinds of things happen. And one of them is that when they experience something that will challenge that thing, they'll be in judgment of it. And then they'll think that's bad, see? What I'm holding is good, and that's bad, and oh, we can't have that. We got to change that. This is paradoxical, because I just told you that the way to live in the world is to actually be part of a change, isn't it? Oh my gosh, what do we do with this? Oh my gosh. She doesn't make any sense. I make perfect sense when you know how to view it. And when you view it from where I'm sitting, it makes perfect sense. You don't have to be engaged in the game to play the game. How many of you have played games with children who are really invested in winning? And from the perspective of an adult, you don't care if you win or lose, right? It's just, you're just there. You got the humor of them, play the game. You'll lose on purpose so that they can feel good about winning, right? Doesn't mean a thing to you. Okay, so that's what I'm talking about. That's the world. You can see it as a game, just, oh, okay. And a whole lot of people believe in it. Okay, it's really important. Okay. So step up and play the game, right? But you don't have to be attached to, did you win? Did you lose? Who came out on top? Yeah, doesn't matter. Does that make sense? So where was I with that? Winning and losing. Polarized. Who's speaking? I can't hear when I have my earbuds in.
We're not here to change anything.
Thank you. Yes, we're not here to change anything. We're here to see through it. So, again, we'll back up to the whole macrocosmic overlay sitting on top of the illumined, non-polarized earth, Right? Can you see it? The overlay isn't real. If you engage in changing it because you feel it needs to change, you just made it real. And then it will be real for you. Versus seeing that what's happening here is meant to distract and is meant to confuse. Yeah. And get you sidelined. Right. And what have I told you over and over about, like, the, well, you just said it earlier when I was working with you. You saw the whole walking through the shadow of the valley of death and holding focus on that light at the end. Hold your focus there. Hold your focus there. And that's what I'm saying. That's the world. All the proof you need and believing in the good, bad thing and the up, down thing and the in, out thing, all of that is right here. It makes sense when you deal with, you know, regular mechanical physics and all of that. Look, gravity's real. Watch me drop an apple. But they are appearances, and from another level, you have to see through them. It doesn't mean they change. They don't need to change. If it's not real, why do we care if it changes? See? Who cares if it changes? It is what it is. The program of polarization. There it is. Okay. Great. So stop believing in the program and refocus and see it for what it is. It's just a program. It's just a program. It's a program you got stuck in. Okay. It was fun while it lasted. Linda's like, not. But even then, as far as the not goes, even that changes. Because when the personal self is dissolved enough, you can look back on any experience and there's just no charge anymore. It's just gone. So it wouldn't matter how horrendous the experience was, right? At a certain point, it's gone. You aren't that anymore. And literally, you know, my experience was in seeing pictures of myself as like a teenager, and I'm like, I don't even know who she is. There's nothing there anymore. There's no, you know, and a lot of people, it's very funny when you look at it from the space of how the ego functions. How many people out there do you know who are adults but still hang on to all of their stories of when they were teenagers or their glory days, right? And tell them over and over and over because of the identification, right? They have to hold that. That's who they are. And it's not real. And you really do move into the space where you see that. You'd be like, wow. Like, I can't even get in there and I can't even pull up anymore. Like, what made her tick? I can't pull up. Where did those choices come from? You know, I can from one level because of the work I do. But as far as like identifying with her, it's just gone. So you literally will look at even pictures of yourself and you're like, oh, like it's just a completely different person, you know? Very interesting. So any questions on any of that? Yeah, come on over. So you sit here and I give you the microphone. Because that's how I hear you.
You want me.
It's just going back to what you were saying about playing games with children and not being invested, just as an aside. A couple of weeks ago, my wife and I went to a pub. There was no seat available, so we had to sit at the bar, and they were sort of in the weeds, so it took a while to get waited on. And we noticed that there was a little checker game that I said, well, do you want to play checkers while we're waiting? And my wife said, I don't know anything about checkers. I said, well, it's no big deal, you know, right? And I could see out of the side of my eye, all of a sudden, all these guys at the bar looked over at me, you know, and I thought, well, here it comes. I'm going to lose the checkers, right? But I didn't care, or so I thought, until I actually started to lose the checkers. And she was like, you know, getting kinged and back jumping and everything, and like in about 5 minutes, you know, the whole game was over with. And it really did, you know, I mean, in a very light way, but it did affect me to know, you know, that I did identify with the idea that I'm supposed to be good at checkers because she said she didn't know how to play checkers. And I think that happens a lot. But I was just thinking that when you were saying that before, that's all.
That's excellent. And Tim, can I tell a story on you in the same vein? So Tim, being a black man, had an experience. What's the name of the game? Spades. So Tim had issues because he would be at a party with a lot of black people. They'd be playing spades, and like they all assumed that he could just run it because, well, you're a black guy. Like, you know everything about spades, right? And it was a real source of embarrassment for him. He had a real issue with it because he didn't know, like, all of the rules. He wasn't raised in a, you know, heavily spades-playing household or whatever, but was very identified with that piece, you know, culturally within the black community. You're supposed to know everything about spades. And it's shameful for the one who doesn't. How can I call myself a black man? How can I take pride in my blackness if I don't know how to play spades? And we can look at that and like, well, that's ridiculous, right? But that wasn't his experience of it. It was very difficult for him. Very difficult. And your experience is the same. And in a sense, you say it like kind of lightly bothered me, but there's no difference, right? It doesn't matter how, you know, it can be a mild sense of irritation or it can be all out rage. It's actually the same thing, because what lies underneath it is the same thing, you know? And, that's a good thing. When I teach you how to process, like, you know exactly what to do with that, because that's the perfect time to do it. You could process that out and see what actually sits underneath it, you know, because in the experience of it, beliefs of yours that you hold to be true for you got challenged, and that's the piece that left you feeling upset, you know, irritated, even ashamed of yourself that I should be better at this, you know. What a loser I am. I can't even play checkers. Yeah. Yeah. Games. It's funny. It's funny. But and it shows a beautiful example, because it's something so insignificant, right? A game of cards, a game of checkers. I mean, we can, from that perspective, say it's really insignificant in the greater scheme of life, right? But you could see how something that insignificant, there's so much attachment that gets put on something so minor, you know. And it's no wonder that the whole planet is tied up in knots, you know. I mean, it's something like I deal with my own children all the time. They're at that age now where the egos are really kicking in. And so I'm constantly bringing them back to, why on earth are you making such a big deal out of that? To get them to actually see, oh, like, that really is not a big deal. Why am I so attached to whatever that piece was? Why did you feel a need that you had to say something? And that's what most of it is with anyone who has children, you know. One of them says something, and of course, the other kid has to present themselves as being right or more right, or to point out the fault in the other. That's the one that kills me. It's very difficult for me to sit around that at this point, because it's like, it's heartbreaking when you witness it. The kid that always has to, no, it's not even kids, it's adults too. You're always looking for the opportunity to prove someone else wrong all the time. And it's disgusting. I mean, it turns my stomach. I think it's disgusting. Yeah, you know, it was one of the, and I used to be really good at it. I was really good at it. I could put people in their place so fast, right? Because I had a very keen intellect and I would use it, right? No one would win a fight with me. There was no argument you were going to win against me. It's funny because my son's the same way. So now I get to experience myself in him that way, which is quite interesting. But when you do the work and you actually see why that's there, you know, that girl and then that woman's need to be right was a basis for her sense of self and her sense of self-worth. And how sad, you know, that her self-worth would be wrapped around the need to be right. And not even just the need to be right, but the need to have others accept that she's right. To the point where she has to make, diminish them, make them less than, in order for her to feel more than, right? That's really sad. And when you see it and then you see it in yourself, it's like, oh my gosh, how many times could I have just bitten my tongue? Let them believe what they want to believe. Who cares? I mean, like, that's the thing that I do with my kids all the time. Let her believe what she believes, you know? It doesn't matter what you do. You're not going to change her opinion. Well, this little girl, she doesn't like me, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, it doesn't matter what you do. Her opinion's going to be her own, regardless of how you act, right? And why do you really care? You know, why are you so invested in having this one person think highly of you? You know who you are, right? I'm like, have you done anything wrong? No. Okay. Are you a good person? Yeah. Do you live in your heart? I try. Great. End of story. She can't see it. Oh, I guess that's just too bad for her. And it's really that simple. Now, as adults, we could do that with our kids, but how often do we do it with ourselves? And we get all invested in, you know, there's this coworker at work that he doesn't like me. It really bothers me, right? Really? And you see, it's not that, like, some people kind of mature out of that to a certain degree. It's a level of consciousness that you move into, but most people don't. You know, most people don't. Or you carry your, the opposite is also true, two sides of the same coin. You will carry with great pride the fact that you just don't care how people see you. And it's the same thing. I don't care what you think about you. You're perfect right there, Pelion. I don't care what people think about me. Yeah, right. Sure. As we watch her nose get bigger, right? But then that's that whole thing that the ego has to do, you know. Whenever it presents that piece, that, you know, whatever is the perfect word to encapsulate it. Whatever. There's pain there, and the whatever or the who cares is meant to cover the pain because we're running from seeing that, oh, I really do care what people think about me. So I have to put on this false front of being tough or being above it all, however you want to term it. But it's still your reality. And you know it's your reality because you constantly will have people who seem to take issue with who you are, right? Always. Bring it back. So now I have to, of course, I'm given the opportunity in that moment to see my fears, yeah, to see where I'm stuck, but I'm not going to take it because you just gave me more proof that it's going to reinforce the fact that I don't care what anybody thinks about me, you know. And then it just makes that particular valence or the role that's being played to, you know, tough broad, we call Pelion tough broad. It makes it that much stronger. It makes that matrix like that much denser, that much harder to push through because she's constantly looking for proof. And she'll always find it. I mean, that's the one thing. Whatever the ego is looking for, it's always going to find it. Well, of course it is. Everything is presented here, right? Everything. So I can sit in a room with two people and I can have one of the people come in from a very skeptical place, wanting proof that I'm a fraud. And I can have another person come in from a completely different place, looking to me as a guru, right? And they're both going to walk away with proof of whatever it is they're looking for. And I'll say the same thing to both of them. Why is that? Well, it's because it has to be that way. Whatever you're looking for, you're going to find. So you'll find it. You'll hear things that I won't even necessarily say. Sometimes you'll read something in a book that's not even there. That actually happens. People will read words in a book that aren't even there. And they'll walk away with this level of understanding that's based on nothing. Because the mind projects it out. I'm sure I read that. Really? That's funny. I read that. I didn't get that at all. And yet, even though you can witness that that's happened, you still walk around believing that all of this is real. And quantum mechanics can show you scientifically, you know, it's about as hardcore as it gets. This isn't real. But then the ego goes, well, but that's just on a quantum level. Like you can't, you know. That's not the same thing. Well, of course it is. Of course it is. You just can't see it because you can't back up enough to see it, to see the whole picture, right? You've got this very limited kind of spotlight consciousness. That consciousness has to expand out before you see it. So right now you do your work and it's personal, right? Because that's all you got. You can see things from your own vantage point. That's all you have to work with. That's great. So we'll use that. And then when enough of that identification falls away, then you actually start seeing from a grander scope. And then you see it. It's not personal anymore. Now it's collective. But you see, it's the same thing. So you'll see something happen in your life. And instead of it being my problem, it's actually witnessed as the collective. That's what's moving with the collective right now. So I'll come in all the time and talk about the energies, right? I did that. We were talking before the program. So the energies have been really rough this week, and there's a lot of fear coming up. So can that mean that in my own personal experience in the world, there are things that are coming up that could be considered fearful? Sure. And that's the thing that would tip me off to what's moving with the collective, because it's not personal anymore. I'm not going to take a piece and go, oh, I'm afraid of that. It's like, oh, let's look at what's coming up now. Now it's a big chunk of fear that's coming up. Good, right? Good. Sometimes I'll let it move through me, just like course through my being. Let the energy just run, right? There are a lot of people on the planet, they do that level of work all the time. They don't attach to it. You know, let the panic attack come. Let it grip you, you know? But then it's like the observer's just watching with no story. It's just energy. Let the energy run. It's not a big deal. And it'll run and it'll do its thing and then it'll go away and you just get up and move on, right? And you all will move into that level of consciousness . Imagine if everybody had that level of consciousness, right? When it stops being personal. When you see it as the collective, it's singular, see? Then it's singular, which is what it is anyway. It's one thing that has been an amazing component for me and my work, is that because of my work, and because for a long time I worked with bunch of people one-on-one all the time, like weekly. And so I was privileged enough to see the same stories popping up with multiple people in the same time frames. And it was amazing, you see, because each one of them was convinced it was like their story. But what I saw was a greater perspective of, oh, look what's running right now. You see, I'd usually see it in my own world first, and it would never fail. Like, I'd be working with people all week and I'd be like, oh, there it is. It popped up there and then it popped up there and it popped up there. You know, but you as an individual, you don't get that. You know, because you're not out watching it now. When the observer gets really strong, you will start to see it. If you're watching TV, you'll see it come up in the news. You'll see it come up wherever. You'll see it come up at work, things people say at work. You'll see the story running. You'll start to make connections, like something that just happened to you in your own experience. You know, you'll turn around the next day at work and some guy's talking about something that he experienced, and you'll see that what is underneath it is the same exact component of what you just went through, what you just looked at. See? And that's beautiful because it helps you to get in a place where you start to see it's not personal. Your life is not personal. It's the collective story that's playing out. It's just playing out, looking a little different for every person, but there's only one story that's playing out. And in any given moment, certain aspects of that story are kind of popping up, right? Multiple aspects will be popping up. Based on your own programming, you'll catch certain ones, and other people will catch other ones. It's what keeps it all hard to see, you know? When you're in the certain, if you looked at the program of patterned consciousness as like a clock face, you know, with like the four quadrants, at one point you may be in the, you know, 12 to 3 quadrant, and then maybe your spouse is in the 9 to 12 quadrant. So you look like you're in different places, you see, and that's what holds the whole separation belief in place. Because where you're sitting doesn't look the same as where the other person's sitting. So you can't see. It's the same story. You're just at a different point on the wheel. But it's the same story. So where the spouse is right now, you will be in about 10 minutes, you know, or whatever it is. And that's part of what keeps it playing. Because, you know, it's hard to see through that until you are given a level of awareness that that's what's going on. And now what? Now you can start looking for it, see? And then you'll see it. Remember, whatever it is you're looking for, you're going to find it. Well, it works in reverse to benefit you as a seeker. So if the ego is looking for something because it wants to stay stuck, it's going to find it. But the exact reverse is true too. As a seeker, if you're looking for that thing to give you a greater awareness, you'll find that too, you see. Remember, the personal self is playing all the roles. It plays all the roles here. It has to. Tim's nodding off. Tim has this thing. It's very funny. Some people that I work with, it's like, if you ever see videos and stuff of like Muji or Idea Shante or something like that, and they're having like satsang, and there's a whole group of people there, there are always people that will just sit in meditation. So rather than really looking at the guru and focusing and all that kind of stuff, they just will just be in the energy, you know? And a lot of people just kind of, it's like they just disappear. And Tim's that one for me. Half the time I look over him, even if we're in one-on-one sessions, sometimes it's like he's kind of like half not even there. It's awesome. It's awesome. He's getting exactly what he needs. So, yeah. Any question before we got a couple minutes, Pelion? 2 minutes. Okay. So do you have any question, Pete? Anything else? Linda, Tim, anything? No? Yes. How many of you, I have to ask a question real quickly. It was awesome. Since I was just talking about Tim kind of half not being there. So during our ending meditation at satsang, someone fell asleep. It was obvious someone was sleeping, if you understand what I mean. So this is good because it's a beautiful opportunity for each one of you to look at it and see what judgment came up in it and what belief got triggered in that. You know, was the belief sitting there that, you know, oh my God, can you believe it? Like, you don't do that. You don't fall asleep in meditation. Or was it, God, you know, it's making it really hard for me to focus, right? That's probably a lot of people's. How am I supposed to focus? How am I supposed to get really into my meditation? Someone's snoring over there. Pete says, yeah, that was me. But the reality of it was perfect for her. It was exactly what she needed. See, and again, the ego can't, it just can't do that. It has to create a dynamic where it's going to use that to place itself in a position. It just can't go, wow, she really needed to sleep. Like, that was the perfect way for her to get what she needed right now. Right? And that's the reality of it. It shouldn't have affected anybody's meditation, right? And it's beautiful because if it affected your meditation, it means you've got some more work to do. Right? Because you should be able to meditate on a New York City subway and have it be fine. It takes time. It takes time, but you will get there. You will get there. Because all of this is just, you know, it's just mirrors and, right? The whole play. And once you've seen through that, it can all do its thing. And you don't even have to be there to listen anymore. And you won't. It'll just tune out and it's just gone. Or it's there and no one's paying attention to it. You know, remember I say mind kind of suffers from neglect. Like, someone just stops paying attention to it. So thoughts can run. Who cares? There's no one attaching to them. No one creating a story out of them. It's just like, huh, you know, they come and go and that's it. That's fine. Is it time? It's time. So we're going to go into our meditation for tonight, and we will be back with you next Thursday. Thank you so much for joining us. It's always such a pleasure and an honor for me to be able to reach out to you this way. Enjoy the meditation. And okay, so we've got another minute. We had producer issues. This is fine. Not a problem. Let me plug something, shall I? Okay, so our website is www.theshambhalacenter.org, and we have Facebook page, which is facebook.com/theshambhalacenter, and we're on YouTube, and we accept donations at any time, so gratefully. We are a nonprofit organization, and we are all volunteers doing our work, and, you know, I don't do anything else. This is my work. And so we have rent and all these beautiful things. So if there's any way that you would like to show your appreciation for our work, that is always the perfect way because it helps us do our work more effectively. And you can, I guess, donate through our website and even on the BBS link. So thank you. We do want to thank you very much for joining us on BBS. BBS is such a fantastic venue for us. They're, you know, Don and Doug are amazing guys doing amazing work. And we feel very privileged to be able to have our show on BBS. So just a plug for them because we love them so much. We're ready. All right. So here we go. Enjoy the meditation and integration, and we will be with you next week. We love you so much. Good night.